This is a special presentation from Florida Public Radio and WLRN Public Media in Miami. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, a conversation with two of the four Republican candidates running for their party's nomination to be Florida's next agriculture commissioner, Denise Grimsley and Matt Caldwell. The other two Republicans in the race, Mike McAllister and Baxter Troutman, were invited, but neither could accommodate this scheduled interview time. This interview was conducted by me and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. We began by asking the two Republicans who joined us to introduce themselves and explain why they are running to be Florida's next Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Protection.
Well, my name's Denise Grimsley. I'm a candidate to be your next Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services. I believe that as your next commissioner, you need to meet three qualifications, which I meet all of those. First and foremost, a hands-on background in agriculture. But second, executive experience with the ability to manage an agency of 3,800 employees and a $1.7 billion budget. I gained that experience by running our family business for 10 years, but I'm also a hospital administrator as well. And the third qualification that I believe you need to meet is experience in the public sector and the private sector in the finance world. And I believe on the private sector side, you need to understand the cyclical nature of agriculture, which I do by being an agriculture producer. But I also believe you need to understand how the policies that we pass in Tallahassee impact our day-to-day life back home. On the public sector side, you should understand how the federal money comes from Washington, how the state trust funds work, how they get to their end use, but most importantly, where to look for fraud. And I gained that experience by being the budget chairman in the House of Representatives for 2 years when I served there.
Matt Caldwell, running for Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services. And the issues that this office deal with have been my passion the entire time I've served in the Florida House. My background, family's been in Florida since 1826. I've grown up in Fort Myers most of my life, stayed there to go to college at Florida Gulf Coast. And when I decided to run for office for the House 8 years ago, I was not the favorite, got outspent about 7-1, but knocked on 4,500 doors and talked directly to the people that voted in that race and asked them what they wanted me to work on. And I talked to them about the things I was passionate about, and consistently that dealt with natural resource issues in Southwest Florida. When I got to the House, number one choice was Ag and Natural Resources, ended up chairing that subcommittee, and then for the last 4 years, the full committee. And as a result, worked on all the issues that really matter to this office, Everglades policy for the last 8 years, statewide water policy, conservation lands and spending, really the critical domestic issues that this office has to be a leader on.
I'm Nancy Ankrum. I'm the editorial page editor of the Miami Herald. Can you critique the job that the person who will be your predecessor has done, Adam Putnam? Ms. Grimsley?
I'll be glad to, and I'm going to start back 25 years ago when I started dealing with the Department of Agriculture. The 10 years I operated our family business, I was in the convenience store business, petroleum distributor, had a propane gas company, and the Department of Agriculture oversaw us in many aspects, the gas pumps, the food service. But I'm going to talk about one specific instance that I had with the department at the time. I walked into a store on a Friday afternoon. Our hot water heater was out. The element was out. We were in the middle of replacing it. And in the state of Florida, you can't sell food unless you have hot water. So in walked the inspector from the Department of Agriculture. Didn't come in to inspect. He came in to buy something. But I knew him, and we had a conversation, and he knew what we were doing, and I talked to him about it. He said, now that I know that you don't have any hot water, but I know you're in the middle of repairing it, but I don't have time to wait for you to finish, so I'm going to red tag your equipment and shut you down for the weekend. I'll come back Monday and turn it on. I'm like, you can't do that. I need to sell coffee. It's January. We don't get a lot of cold air. This was in Arcadia. We don't get a lot of cold weather in Arcadia, but it was a weekend it was going to freeze, so I really needed to sell coffee because that was one of my highest margin items. So he left. He said, I can't. I just can't help you. And I got on the phone and I called Tallahassee. This was prior to Putnam's administration. Called Tallahassee, got the highest ranking person I could find at a 4:30 on a Friday afternoon. Not a lot of people in the Capitol. But the guy that I got was a big jerk. And he was like, ma'am, I don't care what you tell me. You're not going to sell any coffee this weekend. So essentially, give it up and go on down the road. That does not exist today. It has changed. It is much more business friendly. I believe that for the most part, things work very well. It's much more consumer friendly than it was, but it is still not where it needs to be. I think we can take it up a next level.
Thank you. Mr. Caldwell.
Commissioner Putnam and I have had the pleasure to work very closely together over these 8 years, chairing the committees that dealt directly with the policy matters that fall under this office. And I think we have made enormous progress over the last particularly 6 years on statewide water policy, on actual improvements in the Everglades and where we're heading with the questions that really matter to people's lives every single day, the things they're worried about.
Hi, I'm Rosemary O'Hara, the editorial page editor of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. How would you assess the performance of Commissioner Putnam?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously he's taken a lot of criticism, particularly for the concealed weapons permit program. You know, the buck stops at the top. If somebody's not doing their job, they need to be held accountable and fired if they're slouching on it.
How about on water? You know, there have been state pushbacks on federal efforts to control what's in the water flow. And now we are seeing a crisis in our state. In terms of water policy, what needs to happen?
We have engineered a system to allow 3 million people to live, work, and play in South Florida, and water has to be sent somewhere else. If we don't want it to go to the estuaries, you have to re-engineer that system, or else make 3 million people leave, which is not realistic. The Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan is the re-engineering system, 68 projects that will move the water somewhere else. And the tragedy is that we signed that agreement in 99, and until 3 years ago, we did not have any serious commitment to building those projects. The federal government did not meet their 50-50 cost share. We went out and bought, as a state, 400,000 acres in 2000 and 2001 and waited for 14 years, frankly, to build these projects. And it was the Legacy Florida bill that I helped pass. $200 million a year now is being spent every year. We're going to build more projects in this five-year window than we did in the previous 40. And that's going to actually make a difference.
Ms. Grimsley.
Lake Okeechobee is a tourist attraction. It is a freshwater lake, and Okeechobee County depends on it for tourism. So the residents want it to be clean. And then you have the issue with the septic tanks all along the Indian River Lagoon. We also have the issue on the west coast in Crystal River. There are a lot of septic tanks on the west side of 19 that really need to be cleaned up. Now, going forward, I believe that that's a state responsibility, and the state needs to engage in cleaning those up. The property owners are never going to be able to afford to replace those and put in sewer systems. I think that the commissioner ought to be in Washington championing the things that we need. And what really troubles me the most about this whole water issue and the discharges on both coasts, we've got to sit down and work together because we all want the same thing. And you know, and I'll bring up the elephant in the room, which they always talk about, Big Sugar. When I first got elected, we just brought in the Everglades Restoration Plan. Before that happened, Sugar was back pumping water into the lake that was contaminated. So if you're going to blame them for that, if you're going to blame them for their part in all of this problem, this algae bloom, that would be their biggest part. But we clean that up with best management practices, and they are meeting the criteria that they are supposed to meet now. But we have to remember that we have farmers out in the Glades that aren't Big Sugar. They're little farmers that are not just farming sugarcane, they're also farming vegetables and every other thing that you eat at your table when you sit down at Thanksgiving, at Christmas. So everybody's got to be at the table.
Commissioner Putnam made a strong case that the state would do a better job of regulating water quality than the federal mm-hmm. government. And do you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
You do, how do you explain the algae, the nutrients, the phosphorus, the levels that are in this water that are leading to pictures of green slime mm-hmm. Around the world?
Well, you're getting it from a wide variety of places. The septic tanks is a big producer of that. It's runoff is still, but wait, you know, back a few years ago, we still had dairies that were contaminating the Kissimmee River that was going into Okeechobee. We've cleaned that up with best management practices. And in the projects in Everglades Restoration, we've got to get those accelerated and get them done. We need to get the dike finished. And by doing that, we're able to leave a little bit more water in the lake, but we have to be careful about that too, because we don't want to kill our plant life.
If I may ask for just a clarification on the best practices, that has affected the current water quality and the water
Correct.
Quality of the future. You mentioned the back pumping that happened for years of the sugar fields in Palm Beach County back pumping into the lake. Mm-hmm. That sludge remains on the lake bed floor, and the science tells us that hurricanes and thunderstorms and water coming into the lake stirs all that up. That helps really feed the algae. Does Big Sugar, in your estimation, if elected as agriculture commissioner, have a role to play in addressing the historic pollution that still remains in Lake Okeechobee?
Well, I think they're doing that now, and every other farmer out there, by paying the privilege tax that they pay that's going to the water management districts. And I believe that all of those producers out there are meeting the standards that they are supposed to be meeting and are making every effort to do what they're supposed to do.
Mr. Caldwell?
Yeah, so the bill I ran in 2013 actually made the agricultural privilege tax permanent. That makes the farmers in the Everglades agricultural area the only landowners in South Florida that pay two taxes to the water management district, and they do so for originally construction and now the long-term maintenance of the stormwater treatment areas. Your question about Lake Okeechobee, that question is the longest term, most challenging one. We're talking about the second largest freshwater lake in America. Anybody that was familiar with the cleanup efforts we did in Lake Trafford, you can get some scale of what we're talking about. The Lake Trafford is roughly one-tenth, maybe, the size of Lake Okeechobee. It took us 15 years, and it wasn't the dredging. The dredging was easy. The equipment goes out there, pulls the muck off the bottom, they haul it away in a truck. It was, where do you put it all? Where do you pull it all while it dries out?
Howard Goodman, editorial writer of the Palm Beach Post. With the citrus industry in such sharp decline, with development pressures always encroaching on agricultural lands, what is your vision as Agriculture Commission on how to not just preserve and restore, but to improve agriculture in this state where we all know it's so important?
Well, I think, you know, I'm a citrus grower myself. As an agriculture producer, I know that we all get pressures from two sides. We get it from development, but we also get it from government when they go in and buy up land that they then don't use. And I'm going to give you an example. In Glades County, which is a county that I represent, the water managements and the Fish and Wildlife have bought up large amounts of land, and then they don't use them, and they fence them off, and no one takes care of them, so they're not managed properly either. For citrus greening, citrus industry specifically, is number one, the Rural and Family Lands Program, which is in the Department of Agriculture. It allows producers, agriculture producers, to sell their development rights, and they keep farming, so it stays on the tax rolls. You can use it for water storage. I mean, there's a wide variety of things, conservation easements, all kinds of things. But it keeps it on the tax rolls, and it keeps it farming, and it will never be developed. That's the number one program. We have struggled with funding for that program in the last few years. I believe the commissioner should be in front of these legislative committees talking about how important that is. And to my knowledge, I do not remember in my 14 years in the legislature having a commissioner come in and talk about that program. Now, we've had presentations from the department, but not the commissioner. I think the commissioner ought to be more engaged in talking about what's really going on out in the public. And then I'm also going to address citrus greening, which is the one thing that's really impacted the citrus industry. Now, for those of us in the industry, we've learned how to manage as much as we can. The state needs to continue the funding to the University of Florida and IFAS for the research, because we do need to find a resistant rootstock to that disease going forward. And there's going to be more diseases down the road.
Yeah, the agricultural profile in Florida is really developing into two different categories. You've got producers that are competing in global commodities, citrus, beef, the kind of things that you're dealing with producers at every corner of the world, and you have to be very large in order to meet the margins that you have to achieve to make that profitable. And you're going to continue to see that develop in that way. What you've also got is a growing industry of very locally relevant producers, whatever their niche is, whether it's organic or just being hyper-local, having their own farmers market, using the agritourism law to achieve that in their own property, or selling to restaurants within a 100-mile radius. And what the department needs to do is make sure you're supporting both of those scenarios.
While we're talking about agriculture, can you talk about the impact that you are seeing and how you might have to handle it on the tariffs and NAFTA on state agriculture, which again have put farmers and land under pressure? Ms. Grimsley?
Well, again, I think that's a legitimate function of the commissioner to be in Washington a lot, talking about the things that Washington's proposing and how it impacts us on a day-to-day basis. You know, I mean,
what would you say in Washington?
Well, right now, under the current situation, I mean, I believe that the president is negotiating from a position of strength. When NAFTA was passed, it was very much skewed to the Midwestern states, and it's really negatively impacted our tomato farmers. We have lost so many of them. I mean, back where I live, around the parish area, I mean, all of those guys, most of them are out of business now. And as they're producing now, they're producing at about $10 a box, or the $10 a box is the break-even number, but Mexico is bringing them in at $6 a box. And it's also added to the human trafficking issue, the drug smuggling, the drug cartel is involved. And I believe their intention eventually is to put all of our guys out of business. And the commissioner needs to be out ahead of that, making sure that Florida really is at the table and we're not just listening to the Midwestern states, because again, we have 300 commodities in the state of Florida. The Midwestern states have one or two. They're not that labor intensive. We're very labor intensive. So it's very much different than what Washington is used to seeing.
Yeah, this is a huge issue for Florida. You know, first of all, understanding that free trade is valuable and free trade benefits both parties. The problem is the only actual free trade agreement we have is the Constitution. You've got 50 operators, all of which operate under a common currency, a common set of laws, and have no tariffs between their borders. Even NAFTA, designated free trade, there are multiple commodities both in Canada and Mexico that are protected in both directions. It's still not a true free trade agreement. What I can say with absolute certainty is if we don't change it, we will not have a commodity-level scale production of fresh fruits and vegetables in Florida.
Do you think concealed weapons licensing should be in the Department of Agriculture, or does that make more sense to go into law enforcement agency?
Well, I'm going to remind you, the Department of Agriculture is a law enforcement agency, so I think it's an appropriate place for it to be. But I will say about that program, over the past few years, we have seen those permits grow exponentially. And I think with the issue that we have just seen, that impacted that issue. I think, you know, when you have a problem like that, it's one or two things. It's a people problem or it's a process problem. And I believe that situation, it was both. And I believe coming in as a new commissioner, I would do this in all divisions, actually, not just concealed weapons permits, but do a full audit of the department and determine where did that ball get dropped? How did that happen? And make sure that we have the right people and we have the right processes. Because somewhere in there, if you were approving so many permits with none being kicked back, someone should have asked themselves, something's going on here. We should have had a rejection somewhere. And so there's got to be that safety check somewhere. But after doing a full audit, what I would change in the organizational structure is having that director of that division, whoever that might be going forward, report directly to the commissioner, because I believe it's that important.
Well, it is a law enforcement agency. I do think the people expect this specific responsibility to be accountable to an elected official, not to a government employee. And so the direct accountability and the ability for people to evaluate as they are right now, what you saw in this experience was, one, the incredible uptick in interest. You took a program that I think at the start of Commissioner Putnam's term had somewhere around 400 to 500,000 permittees, and it's now at 2 million just after 8 years.
As the elected officials, you will be sitting on the cabinet. Can you talk about your stance on Amendment 4 and the clemency boards, which you would be on, process up to now, which has been rejected by the Supreme Court and kicked back to the state? Mr. Caldwell?
Yeah, absolutely. So here is my standard. If I was in charge of this today, if you were a nonviolent first-time offender, you finished your sentence, you finished your probation, then you should go on the list for rights restoration, and on a regular basis for the however, you know, monthly or quarterly cabinet meetings, and the cabinet officials should have to proactively give a reason to pull your name off of the list.
Right now, the whole process is arbitrary, as the court did say, and takes such a long time.
Sure.
What kind of time frame would you put on what you've outlined?
I think as soon as someone finishes their probation at the next meeting, their name should be on the list for restoration and consideration by the cabinet. And I think it would become a fairly straightforward process.
Now, why should someone who, even though a violent offender or a multiple offender, who has paid his or her debt to society and jumped through all the hoops in terms of punishment, why should that person now still have to make a case?
Well, I think a multiple offender is an easy answer. You know, the theory of incarceration is not only restitution but rehabilitation. And so either we are failing to correctly rehabilitate the individual or they are failing to embrace that rehabilitation. In either case, the exercise of their full civil rights is something I think they need to explain directly to the cabinet.
Ms. Grimsley.
So let me start with the violent offenders and we'll get that off the table. I don't support any automatic restoration for them, and I think there's a process. Now, I do think that the process that we currently use is broken and there's a backlog and we have to figure that piece out. I also think that if it is a violent offense, the victim needs to be involved in that process, whatever that process winds up being. But the nonviolent offenders, you know, if you have, I think you do need criteria. I mean, I think if you have somebody who's a repetitive offender that is dealing in drugs and some other things that are potentially dangerous to the community, it needs to go through the process, and they'll be automatically restored unless we pull them off for some reason. But, you know, the things like the white collar crimes and things, I don't have a problem at all with automatic restoration of that.
Are you satisfied with the pace with which the People's Amendment to get medical marijuana into the state has been going? And two, do you support any form of legalization for recreational marijuana?
I do not support recreational marijuana. I think the Department of Health is doing a very bad job implementing the amendment, the law as it is. And I do believe that it is a legitimate agriculture crop going forward. Now, do we ever move it?
But you don't have to support the legalization, so.
I don't support legalization of recreational marijuana, but I fully support medicinal marijuana. You know, what I will say about that, you know, being a nurse, I can tell you that is a class one narcotic. And it should be treated as such. That's something else the commissioner ought to be working with the federal government on, because that's, the federal government law, the way it is what makes it difficult to implement it in the state. If we could fix the federal piece, it would be so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I helped co-write the Charlotte's Web bill in 2014. Myself and Katie Edwards, Matt Gaetz, the three of us, really were the ones on the vanguard bringing the legislature and the governor forward on this question. I helped develop the expectations, the standards of you got to have a $5 million bond to be in the business. We don't want fly-by-night Cheech and Chongs flying, coming in and trying to open up head shops all over the place, because ultimately we're asking people to partner with the state of Florida to commit what is currently a federal crime. And so you've got to have folks that are going to be ready to handle the challenges of how do you process the banking transactions, how do you move the product potentially if it has any interstate movement between locations, and avoid getting caught in the trap. And I think we did ultimately develop a system that allowed that product to get into the market, and it is in the market. You can get the low THC marijuana, cannabis as an oil, to vape, to take as an edible in every part of the state now. There are shops, there are producers. What I would like to see is more licensees to meet the market demand for those products. I do think DOH did not want to have this responsibility. It's clear from how they've handled it since the day we gave it to them that they didn't want to have this responsibility. If that attitude continues with whoever's the next governor, I'd be more than happy to take over the program wholly inside the Department of Agriculture. Oh, so on recreational, no, I don't support recreational.
On the consumer services side of the job, what are you going to do to enforce the do not call list?
So here's what happens. There's something called the North American Numbering Plan, that if that number is not on that plan, then the carriers know that that's an illegal call coming in. Mm-hmm. Usually it's it's the local number, which is not on the plan, and you answer it because you think it's somebody local calling. And what I found out was that the carriers did not have the legal authority to block those calls. So I just passed a piece of legislation that went into effect July 1st that gives them the authority to block them. So I talked to AT&T last week, and I said, you know, how long is it going to take to implement this? And he said, give us about 6 months. But I can already tell you, because this Elizabeth kept calling me four times a day. She's gone. She's not calling me anymore. So she was one of those robocallers that was coming from overseas. And that was my interest of getting involved in it. But, you know, I'm here in Miami and I'm talking to all the seniors. I mean, they get all these scam calls. So he said, give it 6 months. But in the meantime, If you're getting a call that you know is not a legitimate, you know it's an illegal call, please call your carrier and go ahead and give them that number, and they can preemptively go in and block it. But as commissioner, I think I ought to be out in all of the communities talking about those kinds of things.
That was Denise Grimsley and Matt Caldwell, two of the Republicans running for their party's nomination to be Florida's next agriculture commissioner. The two other Republican candidates, Mike McAllister and Baxter Troutman, were invited but could not accommodate the scheduled time. The candidates spoke with WLRN Public Media in Miami and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. I'm Tom Hudson. This has been a production from WLRN Public Media in Miami and Florida Public Radio.